And this morning we're going to be moving into the last two occurrences of the mind term noose for the intellectual thinking faculty of the mind. And we're going to be looking at a different context. The occurrences of these words that are found in different kinds of contexts often. And this morning we're going to be going into the book of Revelation, where we find the final two occurrences. And the final two occurrences will be relating to two beasts who will arise in the future. And so as we come into this study, I almost skipped these references in Revelation. I almost skipped the ones in 1 Corinthians 14, but decided I was being led to come back and cover these, so we'll have covered all 22 occurrences of the noose by the time we finish these today. And then we'll move on to the verbal form and to another noun form where we do find the same stem. And so that's what we'll be doing. But we best get started, so let's go ahead and begin. Father, we're thankful for the morning. We're thankful for the hope that you placed before us and for the anticipation of the future. And we're thankful that our future is planned out and that it is going to be perfect. And yet for those who are on earth, it's not going to be a very pleasant time. And it'll be quite awful for those who are unbelievers, and for believers, there's going to be a lot of persecution. But again, we're just thankful for your promises, and even for those who are tribulation saints, that you will take care of them and provide for them as well. And we're thankful again for our better hope. As we move into the study, again, just ask for clarity of mind and just ask that time might be used, the Spirit might guide our thoughts. We'd be grateful. Amen. Now, as we come into Revelation, we're going to be considering, as I said, the noose. We're going to find the noose in two passages in Revelation, and it occurs with the word Sophia, wisdom. And so the thinking faculty of the mind, it does relate to, wisdom relates to it. You have a mind, you have a thinking faculty, and you have to use that thinking faculty, but that's where we think, that's where we know things. We can know it with an oida, intuitive, factual knowledge, and we can also know it by experiential knowledge. We can have before that, we can have an acquaintance with things. This is where things do come together within the mind, and so we come into the mind, to the noose, and we do find that that's where our thinking takes place within the noose. And it's where the thoughts, the dianoia, pass through the noose. And so just a little brief summary of things. And as we've noted before, the word noose for intellectual thinking faculty of the mind is translated mind, which isn't very bad. It's not bad translation. And it's also translated understanding, which is not a good translation, because they kind of read into it. Now we're carrying over to another language, I think. But it is distinct from Suniemi, which we will, Lord willing, in the future look at, which is the term for understanding. And so this is a distinct term, though, as we've been noting. Now, in the context this morning, we're going to be working in the book of Revelation. And we do find that in the context, all surrounding the uses, it's all dealing in context, dealing with two men who are represented as beasts. And so there are two beasts who come up and who are going to be involved in the latter times, and this will be in the tribulation. So you have both of these are identified and referred to in chapters, throughout chapters 11 up through chapter 20, we find reference to the beast. But our focus is going to be in chapter 13, where we come to the two beasts as they're referred to and where they come from and a little bit of their activity and where they, the source of their strength their power and all of the authority they have as they rule, but we see that these will be involved with government. And so these will be political heads. The first one will be essentially a political head, and the second one will be political, but he'll be more religious. Both of them will have a religious streak to them, but the first one will be essentially political. The second one will be religious. And these are, they're described as beasts because they're dangerous. They're like beasts. And so it describes them like they're wild animals is the way that they are pictured here in figurative language. And so these two beasts, though, they have, there's a lot of description. Now, the word beast occurs 45 times in the New Testament, as it's found in our Bibles. But you have it 37 times in the book of Revelation. And so it occurs a lot in the book of Revelation. 36 of those occurrences do relate to the two beasts, though. And so 36 times it describes these two men. Now, the other occasion is back in Revelation chapter 6, and you do have it used there in 6:8 of wild animals, of the animals, of the beasts of the earth. And so it is used in a normal sense. But the other occurrences all are found beginning in chapter 11 and verse 7. So we'll come back and look at that in a bit here. But we find that these beasts, they're destructive, and they are against God. They're blasphemous characters, and they will carry on during the tribulation. And so the activity begins that we see here, though, in 11. You'll jump back to the beginning of the first beast, but the first beast is described in chapter 11. And so as we come to the first beast in chapter 11, you'll see the setting here is you have two witnesses, and God sends two witnesses who are upon the streets of Jerusalem, but you have two witnesses, and they're able to do sign miracles and things. They do things, and it's not something that the world likes because it's because of the unrighteousness of the earth. But when we come to verse 7, it says, and when they, that is the two beasts, shall have finished their testimony or their witness, what will they do? The beast that ascended out from the, it says the bottomless pit, that is just the word for abyss. It is abusos, but we'd call it the abyss. And so it is down in the heart of the earth. This is where spirit beings go and shall make war. He's going to wage a military campaign against them and shall overcome them and kill them. And so the first beast here at mid-trib, he's going to be responsible for killing the two witnesses. Now it says he's a beast that comes up, he ascends up out from the abyss. Let me just say this. Men do not come out of the abyss, but you do have spirit beings who are in the abyss, and nobody comes out of the heart of the earth. Where do the unbelievers go? Where have they always gone? Where did believers go up until Christ removed paradise? Well, they went to the heart of the earth. They went to Sheol, Hades, and so there in Sheol, Hades, they is where humans go. So this is looking at a spirit being, I would say. This would be a demon who rises out of the abyss. Likely he's the one who's going to eventually, we'll get to it in chapter 13, when the first beast is wounded and he has a wound unto death, a death wound, and dies and he's given life again. It's likely that the demon comes up out of the abyss and gives him life. And so he is able to do things. And so he does come back to life. But anyway, this is the introduction to the beasts. And so this is the first beast. He kills the two witnesses. He's responsible for the killing of the two witnesses, creating great joy on the earth. And then as you move on down in verse 11, the spirit from God, the spirit of life, God is ascends into these two men, and they're given life, they're resuscitated, and they stand upon their feet. And then they're called up into heaven in the next verse. Well, that's the first beast. That's the first reference to Therion, the beast that we find. Now, the next time, but in between there, I do want to pause for just a moment to mention chapter 12, because they all connect together. In chapter 12, you start off with a dragon, and so you have the great red dragon described in verse 3, but he has seven heads, he has 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads, and so on. The dragon is over kingdoms, he has kingdoms, and so there are kingdoms here upon the earth that the dragon has. He's the great red dragon. But if we go down to verse 9, we find out who the dragon is. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent. Remember the serpent. This would take you back to Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 and 4. The serpent that deceived Eve. It was this, that here we do find that the serpent was none other than Satan. And so Satan had taken over the serpent, and he deceived Eve. Thoroughly deceived her. But the serpent that is called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. So he deceived Eve back in the garden. Now he deceives the whole world. And so he's a deceiver, and so it goes on. It describes how in the future he's cast out of heaven. And he and his angels, his demons are cast out with him to earth, but they pursue the woman, they're pursuing Israel and the remnant of Israel. And so there will be a remnant of believing folks at the end of, in the second half of the tribulation. It's not going to be easy. And so this is where he leaves off. Just to bring up chapter 12, does deal with the dragon and identify the dragon and what is the destruction and attempt to destroy Israel. God's going to protect them out in the wilderness again. But this does bring us now down to chapter 13. And the first thing that we see in chapter 13, John, he says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea." And so he's standing on the sand of the sea. Now, there's likely would be a picture of the Mediterranean, but he's dealing with something more than just a sea of water. And what he's describing, and when you find sea is often used to describe seas of people. And so this would be looking at the Gentile, at the peoples of the world. And so he comes out from the sea. In other words, this man would be a Gentile rising up. And so when he comes up out of the abyss to kill and when he comes up, he has demon aid to do so back in 11 and verse 7. But John sees him rise up out of the sea. And notice the description of this one now. Satan gives this man all of his kind of authority. He has 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns, 10 crowns. Now, the word crowns here, it's a diadema, it's diadem. So these would be the kind of crowns that a king would wear. These would be metallic crowns that a king would wear, and not the Stephanos that believers receive. We receive rewards of crowns, but they're Stephanos, which were essentially olive branches, and they would put them upon the head of the winner of the events in the Olympiad, the races, whatever, the wrestling, and all of those things. Well, they have diadems. They're indicating that they do reign, that they are kings. So these are kingdoms. And so they do represent kingdoms. We won't go back to Daniel, but Daniel chapter 2, you have the image of the beast back there. Over in chapter 7, we see references to this that would relate to this character and what will take place when he comes. But we go on, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. So he has the names of blasphemy. And so there are things attributed to this beast that are not true of him. And so there, he's looked at as something, it represents something that he's not. And so he's going to, we'll see, he'll represent himself as though he's God. Then the second beast will also be, they'll misrepresent themselves, but they're very blasphemous in what they have to do and say. Now, before I leave this first verse though, I want to say, you will find back in chapter 17 and verse 8, you'll find the beast that comes from the abyss again. We have about three references to the abyss and the beast. And so he is he's going to be indwelt by demons. He's going to be empowered by demons, but he's Satan's man. And so he will arise, and he's going to be the head over kingdoms. And now we're not going to have time to go back into Daniel to look at these things there. They do correspond. There is some correspondence, and they do relate. And that's something that is important, but not where we're headed today. We're just headed down to the last verse and over into chapter 17 to look at the word news. But we are emphasizing that. But this will set up the background for the use of the term news, the intellectual thinking faculty of the mind, as we see it in these two references. And so it is kind of, it's important to see the background, though, as to what's going on. And it does relate to the use of the intellectual thinking faculty. And so we'll be developing this a bit, but I shouldn't take the time to go there, but it just comes through my mind. James H. Brooks, who was one of the men who taught along, who was at conferences and things with C.I. Schofield, Gabe Align, and all these earlier dispensations in the last, within the last couple centuries here anyway. James Brooks, he was an amillennialist. He was taught at Princeton Seminary. He was had been taught Reformed, but he was a man who was spirit filled. He was a man who studied the scriptures and knew the scriptures. He was likely one of the leading, if not the leading, he was right at the top of scholars of the day when it came to biblical scholarship. Now, I find it work, and it is work, to take a concordance and to go through and trace subjects through and work them through. Brooks didn't use a concordance. The concordances we have, they weren't available then. So when he wanted to do a study, what did he do? He would start in Genesis and he'd read through up to Revelation. But he stayed out of Revelation. But he knew his Bible and he knew it well. He knew the book of Daniel. He knew it very well. And he could respond to any of the scholars of the day, but he did know Daniel. But he tells the story of how he became a premillennialist. He came to be and the pre-tribulationist, he read the scriptures in the morning at breakfast, and they'd read from Genesis up to and stop. One of the kids said, "Well, why don't we ever read Revelation?" "I don't know. It's in the Bible." So they read Revelation. So he read through Revelation. He'd never been into Revelation because it was a closed book. And so he read it and he saw the similarities in Revelation to the book of Daniel. And he began to study. And in a month's time, the Holy Spirit worked in his mind that he understood that it wasn't that there was going to be a 1,000-year kingdom someday. And before that, there was going to be the saints going to be taken out. And so he became a pre-millennial scholar, and he wrote some things that were of value to the saints. Well, I just say that instead of turning back to Daniel today, because we don't have time, didn't have time for a little story either, but it is an interesting thing. They do correspond. And so as we come into the second verse, it says in the beast, and so he goes back to the beast that came up out of the sea. In verse 1, he said, it, which I saw, was he was like, he was similar to a leopard. And again, in this hand, his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And so you go back, and you can go back to Daniel chapter 7, that verses 4, 5, 6, you will see these descriptions of kingdoms on the earth. And so he represents kingdoms. He has kingdoms that he's going to be over. And so he would be the head of the revived Roman Empire, is how it would calculate. And notice the next part, though. Now, this is why we looked at chapter 12 for a minute, to look at the dragon, because now it says, and the dragon gave him his power, that is dunamis, his inherent power, and his seat. Now, whenever you find seat in Romans, now this is the word thronos, and so it should be translated throne. In fact, I just glanced across the page in my Bible, 14:3, and there you do see throne. It's translated throne. It should be throne here and in the various other places where it occurs. But they wanted to distinguish it, I guess, from the throne of God. I'm not sure why they translated it seat. It isn't the word for seat. It's a throne. And so it is a seat, but it's a throne seat. But it's a throne. And so where one who is a king would sit, or a ruler would sit. And so he gave him his throne and great exousia authority. So they do translate it well here. It is the word authority. So he gets three things from the great dragon, the great red dragon in the last chapter, Satan, the devil, Satan. And what you have is he gives him his inherent power, he gives him his throne and his authority. And so this character does have, he is going to be a powerful individual here upon the earth. He's going to be a world political leader. And so this is where he will function. Now, verse 3 goes on and steps to another point dealing with this man. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded. And so it's wounded to death. And so he has been, he's damaged, but he's not just wounded, he's dead. And so he's wounded to death, and so he dies, and so he's been put to death. Now, I don't know when this will be. Maybe back in Ezekiel 37, 38, don't really know, but he gets a wound and some conflict, and so he's wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And so when his wound was healed, that means that he was brought back to life again. And so where he had been killed, now he's healed, and that indicates that he's been brought back to life. He's resuscitated. Now, again, this is something that that Satan will have something to do, a demon likely, maybe the one that comes up out from the abyss in 7:11. And connects with this man. He gives him life, though. And so he is brought back to life. And notice the next thing. It says that all the world wondered, it marveled. The whole world marveled after the beast. And so the world is aware of this beast. He's the great ruler, the great political leader of the world, over the governments of the world. And he's been killed, and now he's alive. That causes the whole world to marvel at it. Well, it was quite a thing that he came back to life. Now, the next verse goes on to describe what will take place, though, with this beast. As we look at this beast, and they worshiped the dragon, which gave authority, and the word power here is exousia. And so it should have been authority back in verse 3, or verse 2. Where he gave great authority. And so they worshiped the dragon, that is Satan, and so who gave authority unto the beast. And so they're doing obeisance, and that's the worship here. We do find it used sometimes, even with the church, with church things earlier, but this was the way that they worship. They'd fall on their face before one who was a king or whatever. They would do obeisance. Well, they're doing this to Satan, and Satan is the one who's behind this beast, this man who is a beast. And they worshiped. They did the same thing. They did obeisance to the beast, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? Who's like him?" Well, this is really something special. They marvel over him because he's died and come back to life. In a way, he's kind of a counterfeit here, as we'll see. But who is, and they continue, the second question is, who has the inherent power, the ability to make war, literally to wage a military battle, conflict? And so this is a whole military campaign. This would be like a world war, like World War I or World War II kind of a term. But it's who's going to, who can do this? Who has the ability to make war with him? And so they see this beast. He's great. They see his power. They see that he has all kinds of power, but he's died. He's come back to life. Now again, we'll see. I think you do see something about this beast. He will be like a false Christ. He died. Christ died and rose again. Well, this guy, he's been brought back to life. And so the Christ raised himself, as well as the Father and the Holy Spirit involved in his resurrection. But here it does cause the world to marvel. Now, this guy, who is this guy? He would correspond back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And if you go back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3, you find that the church is going to be, there's going to be a departure of the church. The church is going to depart. And after the church departs, there's going to rise up this man. He's called the man of sin or lawlessness, textual problem. Either one, the sin is the lawlessness. So it's essentially saying the same thing. But I'd say the man of lawlessness, he's the man of perdition or ruin. And so you find him back there. This is the man who's going to come after the rapture. Things are going to be pretty good for these people. At mid-trib, he's going to kill the two witnesses. They're going to be brought back to life. They're going to be raised. It'll be a resurrection of those in the streets, and God's going to call them up to heaven after they stand and begin to walk about again. So this guy has power, but we see something further about him that describes the kind of character that this man has. And so this is going to be going on for 3.5 years. Notice verse 5, "And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things." And so he vocally speaks. He communicates great things out of this mouth that is given to him, and blasphemies. And so he, again, he's attributing things. Things are attributed to him that are not true of him. The things that he's represented by aren't really what he is. But now he turns to God and he blasphemes God. He attributes things to God that aren't true of God, and things that are blasphemous. And it goes on, and authority. The word power here is the same word translated authority over at the end of verse 2. And so a great exousia was given unto him. And so again, he has his power. Where is in his authority? Where does it come from? From Satan. And so it given to him to continue 42 months. So you have 42 months, you end up with 3.5 years. And so he has power, and he's a very blasphemous person, as it goes on in verse 6, "And he opened his mouth in blasphemy," notice, "against God." And so his blasphemy, it's emphasized again because he is such a blasphemous person, but he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his character. And so he blasphemes the character of God and his tent, the word tabernacle, his tent, his skene, and it says them that tent in heaven. The verb here translated dwell is skenao. It's a temporary dwelling in heaven at the moment. And so these, but he blasphemes God and those in, and his character and those in heaven. Now in verse 7, we come to another thing about this man. Again, we could go back into Daniel 7, but we don't have time. But it was given unto him to wage a camp, military campaign again. And so this is the same word that they ask who is able to make war against this beast. Well, it was given to him, to the beast now, to wage a war, a campaign with the saints. Now, these are not Christians, obviously. These are not church saints. These are saints who are there during the 3.5 years during the tribulation. And so he's going to wage a warfare, a campaign against those saints who are here upon the earth. And notice, it's not going to be easy and to overcome them. And so he overcomes them, and you have exousia again. Instead of power, it's his authority. He has the authority was given to him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. So he's over everything and everybody on the earth, this political leader. And so he is over the whole works. And so he's a powerful individual, but he does wage a campaign against those who are saints, those who are tribulation saints. And you can't blame those tribulation saints who are martyrs, who are under the throne. How long? Until when? Until when? He wants vengeance. And vengeance is mine. God will take it out on these ultimately in his time. But they are going to suffer, and many will die. And in verse 8, it goes on, and all that are settled down in a home, this is not just dwelling, but these are those who are settled down and at home. They're at home here. These are earthlings upon the earth. What will they do? Well, we saw them worshiping Satan. We saw them worshiping the beast. And they shall worship. They'll do proskuneo. They will do obeisance to him whose names are not written in the book. And so the ones who won't do it, you notice who they are. He identifies them with a relative clause whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, the one that was slain from the foundation of the universe. Take this back to the cosmos here. It's not just the world system, but it takes it back into the foundation of the universe. And so their names are not written in this book. Now, this book is a book that is limited to those who are going to be tribulational saints and millennial saints. It's not to not all saints, but it's to their names aren't found in this book. God has books, and so their names weren't there. And so these are unbelievers. Their names aren't there, and therefore they worship the beast as well as the one who is behind the beast. Now, as you come to verse 9, he says, it's a first class condition. I'd say since some man has an ear, since someone has an ear, let him hear. And so he's calling on those here on the earth to listen. Now, again, if we haven't taken it in, he's writing to those in the future, events in the future. And so as John is borne along by the Holy Spirit, he's using some figurative language, but he is describing what's going to happen upon the earth in the future. And that will be when this will be in the tribulation. And so this guy's power is seen. He has this authority for 3.5 years. And so this is something that, again, relates to the future. And so it's, again, let me just say this here. This is didaskalia. This is not didache for us. And so we don't live by this, but we do learn about it. We learn from it. And so it is there for our learning. We just don't gain practice from it. And so this, keep that in mind as we go through the rest of this chapter, going into the, and just reference over to the next chapter where we find news. But it goes on to say, he that leadeth into captivity. And so this is any man, let him listen. And so at this time, if they're leading somebody into captivity, they're taking captives, he shall go into captivity. He's going to get, it's going to be dished out to him what he's dishing out to others. He that killeth with the sword, well, what's going to happen to him? He must be killed with the sword. And so he's going to die if he kills others with a sword. Well, this is going to happen. And you have this campaign going on against the saints. Well, it's going to come back on those who are living on earth at the time. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And so the saints, he's describing the patience and the saints, the ones who are being slaughtered and the ones who are living at this time. They have to wait patiently. Now those under the altar, they have to learn some patience as they wait. God will deal with them, and he's going to deal with them for sure, and he's going to deal with them in his time. And so that's something that you can count on. And so, but this relates to the faith of the saints. They would be corrupted. They would try to corrupt them and to draw them in, but they're not going to. There will be those who won't give in to this first beast, nor to the second beast. And so as we come down to verse 11, now we come to the second part here of the chapter, and John sees something else. The first beast, he saw him rising up out of the sea, indicating that he came out of the sea of the world of mankind. He saw him coming up, a Gentile who would be the head over the revived Roman Empire in the future. And so he continues on in verse 11, and I beheld another beast of the same kind. So here's the second beast coming up out of the earth. And so notice this one comes up out of the earth. And the earth and the land, this would relate more to Israel, to a Jew who would be coming up out of the land. And so I would believe that this man is a Jew as he comes up out of the earth, and he's going to be involved more with religion, though he will be a political leader too, but he's going to carry out, and he's going to promote the first beast, the one that Gentile that comes out of the sea, the great political leader. But now you have this beast coming up, but notice this one, he's a fraud too. And it says, and he had two horns like a lamb. I don't know, I've never seen a lamb with horns, but he has probably two nubbins on his head, and it's indicating this is a male lamb. And again, he's a counterfeit. And so the lamb is mentioned here, the Lamb of God. But in Revelation, we come to the Lamb, but here he's going to be one of, let's say he's going to be one of the false messiahs who's going to go around saying that he is here, he is Messiah. And so you'll have those who are false messiahs. Again, we won't go back to Matthew 24 to look at this, but you can read through it and down around verse, but there will be those who will say, here is Christ and there is Christ. And some will claim that they are Christ. Well, they're not Christ. And this guy would fall into that category of one who would present himself as Christ, as the Messiah, the anointed one. And he comes as a lamb. But notice what he does. His speech betrays him, though. And he speaks, he communicates, he vocally speaks similar to a dragon. And so he sounds like a dragon. Well, Satan's a dragon. And he will see where he gets his power, but he speaks just like a dragon, kind of like the father of lies, no doubt, as he does so, but he speaks as a dragon. And then it goes on to describe his authority. And it says he exercises all the authority he does. It's just the word poieo, he makes, he does. All the authority, the power here, exousia, again, looking at his authority, the authority of the first beast, the one that came up out from the sea. And so he has all of the authority that was given to the beast. the first beast back over in verse 2. Where did he get it from? Well, the first beast got his power, he got his authority, he got his throne, his authority, he got all of that from Satan, directly from Satan. And this one, he has the power, the authority of the first beast. So it's kind of passed down, but it is essentially going back to what the power, the authority that this man, the first beast, has. And so the first beast before him, and he causes, or he makes the earth and them which are settled down and at home therein to worship the first beast. And so he causes them to do obeisance, to worship the first beast. So you see, he's kind of coming on the scene now. The first beast, he was slain, but he's brought back to life. But he's going to support him, and he's going to make everybody who lives on the earth, who will do so, he's going to make them to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And so he's going to do this, but he doesn't stop there. He has some supernatural power also. And so Satan can do things. And oftentimes when you think of this, it goes back, you think back to Egypt and how the magicians of Egypt were able to duplicate what Moses did to a point. But they could do things. Well, it says, and he makes great sign miracles. And that's the word wonders, and the word doeth. He makes great sign miracles. And so these sign miracles, they're going to point to him as somebody special, maybe as a Messiah, but they're going to point to him so that he makes fire come down out from the heaven and onto the earth and in the sight of men. And so he's going to perform sign miracles, and he's going to bring fire down before, and men are going to be, there's going to be before men, they'll be able to see this fire coming down out from heaven. And so it's going to be a demonstration of his authority as he does so, and he deceiveth them. And so verse 14 describes something, and so he's just like the great deceiver. He causes them to wander. He deceiveth them that are settled down and at home on the earth. And so you have quite a contrast here. Most of the earth will be covered by earthlings. These are people settled down and at home on the earth. But you will have saints. You will have some who are believers. And again, these are tribulation believers who are there, and they're going to be suffering. But here he deceives them that dwell, that are settled down and at home on the earth. He does it through these sign miracles, and this word miracles here is, it is the sign miracles, again translated wonders above. And so it is same ion of signs. These are sign miracles which were given to him. It doesn't say he had power, but these were given, ditto meat, to him to give in the sight of the beast, of the first beast. And so he does these things. He's able to do these things with the authority of the first beast. And they're going to draw attention, but he's going to deceive. Now in Matthew 24, he tells, he's speaking to Israel in 24, but he tells them how to, that they don't be deceived. And in 24:24, if it was possible, some of these events that this man would do, they could deceive the elect. It won't happen, but if it was possible, they could even deceive the elect. But he says, don't be deceived. But saying to them, but this guy, he says to them, and so again, he communicates to them, the ones who are settled down and at home on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And so we see that, again, this points out that he was wounded. The first beast was wounded with a sword. So he was in conflict. He was in battle where there were weapons, and so he was killed. He did live. And so it makes it a little clearer statement here. And so they're going to, now he's going to make the world, they're going to make an image of the beast. And so you're going to have an image to the beast. And notice in verse 15, it goes on further. And it said he has power, but it's didomi again. And he gave it was given to him to give life, it says. That's not a very good rendering. This is the only place that pneuma is translated life. I'm not sure why they translated it life. It's different than what he did live, but this is not give life. It's pneuma, it's spirit. He gave a rationale. He gave a rational mind, and he gave a rational mind to the image of the beast. So you have this image that was made. And so this is something handmade, an image, but it was to the beast. It looked like the beast. And so he gives him this, and he gives him a mind. It's a rational mind. And so this was something supernatural. We talk about artificial intelligence. This was something that was a little supernatural here, though, a little demonic activity to the first beast, to the image of the beast. And the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and it's going to vocally speak, communicate, and so it can speak, and it's going to cause as many as would not worship, they wouldn't do obeisance, they wouldn't bow down to the image of the beast, should be killed. And so those who won't bow down to the beast, there's going to the image of the beast, and they're going the image of the beast are going to be caused to be killed. Sounds a little bit like Daniel. He wouldn't bow down, but God spared him. But these will be killed. They're going to suffer, any who are believers at this time. And if you weren't a believer, well, the first thing you would do is you'd go out and get a shot. No, that's not what you do. You would go out and you would bow down to the image so nothing would happen to you. And so you would do that. You would, anyway, you would spare your life any way you could. And that's just, but some won't. And so these would be the saints who were going to be killed back in verse 10. And so, and he causeth all. And so when it says he causeth, it's not the word cause. He makes all. He makes and makes all, both small and great. And so rich and poor, doesn't matter how important they are, doesn't matter how, whether they have a lot or a little, free and slave. He makes all of these to receive a mark. And so this charagma is going to be some sort of a mark that's going to be stamped upon in their right hand or in their foreheads. And so we come to the mark of the beast. Well, the mark of the beast will be something that will identify these. And this gets down to Matthew 25. The next verse to me describes a lot that takes place there. And in verse 17, that no man might buy or sell except he that hath the mark of the name of the beast or the number or his name. So if without the mark, without the name, the character, the name of the beast, we don't know what the beast's name was. He's going to bring that up. And without the number, they would not be able to buy or sell. That means you can't buy food. You may not be able to get water. You may not be able to, you won't have clothes. So what you have is going to be limited, and you're probably not going to have much. At the end of Matthew 25, those who are sheep, they said, I said, you gave me water, you gave me bread, you gave me garments, you went visited me in prison, you did all of these things. They said, when did we do that? Well, when you did it to the least of these. And so these were the, and so there would be the 144,000 who would be out going about the earth as witnesses. And these will be Jews who will be going around. They're going to be protected, but they will maybe need some water, some food. And someone of these on the earth, will, who's just believe, doesn't believe in the beast, but he believes in God and the gospel dealing with what they know now, what the message is to them. They're going to offer, they will give food to those, to the least of these. They'll take care of them. And so that appears to be the case, but they're going to suffer. And it's going to be very tough. They get down to just a drop or two of water, just a crumb or two of food. And just as tattered garment on their back, whatever. But that brings us down to verse 18. Here is wisdom. And so now wisdom. Wisdom involves in knowledge. It has intuitive knowledge. That is intellectual knowledge. It has experiential knowledge. But wisdom is involved. You have to have knowledge when you have wisdom. But if you have wisdom, you know when and how to use that knowledge. And sometimes and that's where wisdom enters in. You know something, but how do you use it? When do you use it? What do you do with it? Well, this is what wisdom involves. And so he says, here is wisdom. This is wisdom right here. And so this he's going to tell him. And so he says, let him that has understanding. Doesn't say understanding here. This isn't Sunni-Ami. And I don't think that it has to be translated that way. This is news. And so let him, the one having what? An intellectual thinking faculty. His mind. He has a thinking faculty. He can think. Then let him count. And so it says, let him do something here. So here you have wisdom. Wisdom is using your intellectual thinking faculty. You know what to do and when do you do it. You know how to do it. This involves wisdom. But you have to have a thinking faculty and you have to use it. And this is what wisdom is. And so for those living in the tribulation, he says, let him count. Let him count the number of the beast. And so let him count. And this is the idea of taking pebbles out and calculating. And it comes from counting pebbles, kind of. But you take it and you calculate the name of the beast. And so or count the number of the beast. And so they don't know who this is. Well, it's a good thing to know who this beast is, for it is the number of a man. What's the number of a man? Well, the number of man in scripture, when you go into biblical numerology, it would connect to six. And so six is a number that is something that was the number of a man. But this is three times. It's 666. And so he says, and his number is 666. So 666, that's his number. And so they could somehow figure that out. Now, I'm not going to try to figure it out because I have no idea, and nobody else does either. And from the time this was written, people have tried to figure it out. They've done it by calculating numbers and things. It wasn't written for us today, but it is out in the future. It's something, this is wisdom, figure out who this guy is and look out. Kind of a thing, but you need to figure out his number and to identify this man. And so you don't know. I mean, you can take numbers and equate names, letters and names, try to calculate them out, try to figure out some name. Well, this man, we don't know who he is, but Satan does. He does have a man on the scene. He has a man in the wings every generation, somebody who could step in. And so he doesn't know when these events are going to take place, but they are going to take place. And so it could have taken place back in John's day. It could have taken place, and it hasn't. And it's taken a lot of centuries since. But there is somebody in the wings that God has. Probably it may not be anybody we know, but he's somebody who's very sharp, and he's going to be sharper than most anybody. And he's going to have some supernatural aid from Satan if he arrives on the scene. Well, we could look around about us and we could say, well, it must be him or her or whatever. It's not going to be a her, though. We know it's a him. And so we know that. But it could be somebody we have no idea who it is. But he is going to be somebody who's going to rise up out of the Gentiles. First of all, he's going to be a great political leader. And you're going to have some peace and safety for a while. First half of the tribulation, mid-trip, things, this guy's going to kill the two witnesses. And ultimately, this guy's going to be wounded. He's going to die, and he's going to be brought back to life. He's going to be resuscitated. And then the second beast ultimately comes on, and he promotes the first beast. And so that's but that's his wisdom, if you have him. And you have to use your thinking faculty. And so we come here and look at this anyway. Now, the next reference that I want to move on, I'm just going to have to do this real quickly, just point it out. Now, this is still dealing with the beast. You have some passages, some references in between chapter 13 and 17. But when you come to chapter 17, again, you have essentially the same statement made concerning the beast. And so I'm just going to kind of hit that. You have a beast riding the scarlet colored beast. A woman represented by Babylon is going to be riding upon the beast. It's going to be religious. It's going to be the religious leader here and so on. You could see that back in Daniel 2:11, 36 and 37. He's going to be one who makes himself to be God in effect above all gods. But just look at verse 9 and says, and there is the mind. Now that's a little bit better translation. That's nous. And so, and here is the mind. And the mind here is the thinking faculty, with a mind, which has wisdom. And so the mind can possess wisdom. This is what wisdom is. It relates to your thinking faculty. You just have to have some facts and you have to know when and how to use it. And he's going to go on and describe it and describes seven heads here, or seven mountains, that is kingdoms, representing kingdoms figuratively on which the woman sitteth. And you have seven kings and so on down through the context here. But this is where wisdom falls in to connect with, we see it connected with the news. And so you do have to use your mind. These in the future during the tribulation, they need to calculate who this man and his number is, so they can be aware. And they're also going to have to, at this time, their wisdom is also to understand what's going on in the religious world. When you have the woman, Babylon's riding upon the beast, the scarlet beast. And so this is going to, again, be dealing with those things. Things could be leading up to these kind of things, we don't know. God does know, and today, we could say, well, perhaps today, because we have something better to look forward to than the events described here. Father, we're thankful for your words. We've been able to look into it this morning. Again, we're thankful that we do have a better hope based upon better promises, not because we're better, but because of your grace. We're thankful for that now. But for your blessings, we move on. In the day, and be grateful. Amen.